So much, Canel. Thank you, everybody. Wow, that is a surprise. We're off schedule now, though, so I guess maybe I can catch us up here. And thanks, Mike, so much just for leading us, particularly that song, The Heart of Worship. Just hearing people sing that song in here, and it reminded me of when I first started leading worship 25 years ago, and that was a song we led a lot. And I think I just cried through that whole song. It's so powerful, and it kind of it forces the heart to remind ourselves, why do we even do this? So I really, really appreciate that. So I've been wanting to do this for a few weeks because I keep forgetting. So I have a few shirts here, and there are more left, and so I want to encourage some folks to buy some Granite City t-shirts. But I have a few to give out, and I'm just going to throw them out, okay? But you got to catch them. Oh, good catch. All right. Who can catch? Linda's like, I don't want your shirt. If it doesn't fit you, you can pass it out to somebody else. So there you go. All right, good catch. Who got that? Tiffany, Sophia? All right, good catch. All right. Well, so this morning we're diving into a new sermon series about deconstruction. What is deconstruction? Some of you may ask. Well, the short answer is it's complicated, okay? But the gist of it is this. Deconstruction represents the dismantling of cultural norms, beliefs, and ideologies, okay? And deconstruction can happen to anybody, okay? Christians can deconstruct. Atheists can deconstruct. Conservatives, progressives, traditionalists, all people, whatever it is that they kind of hold on to, they can deconstruct of that thing. And it isn't anything new. Deconstruction is something that's been around for as long as people have been around. That being said, deconstruction kind of ramped up a lot during the European Renaissance and Enlightenment. It reached new heights during the 1960s, and it's reached kind of fever pitch over the last decade, to the point where we don't really have many commonly held beliefs anymore in our culture because we've just kind of deconstructed our way out of it. And if the thing, I would say the most commonly held belief that we have today is you can and should believe whatever you want to believe, right? And if the thing that you believe is something that your parents gave to you or something that's archaic as the church maybe, then your belief is of little value and needs to be deconstructed. Right. So for this morning and then over the next 6 weeks, we're going to try to kind of pull back the curtain on deconstruction and see what's going on in our world. And quite frankly, what's going on in our own hearts, all right? And so we want to deconstruct deconstruction, all right? So that's kind of where we're going for this. That's what the series is all about. And this morning, I'm going to give us kind of a fire hose introduction to deconstruction. We're going to look at that text that Canel just read for us. But deconstruction isn't something that's out there. Like, deconstruction is right here in our midst. And we want to be able to understand it well so that if and really when we maybe start to go through our own deconstruction or our friends and loved ones start going through their own deconstruction, they can and we can do it well. Okay, and not deconstruct our faith away completely, which is happening all over the place. And so my hope for us today, as we wade into these waters, is that we might kind of find some firm foundation, like we heard in the scripture this morning, find some firm foundation to stand on. We don't want to be tossed to and fro by the waves, do we? Right? That's why this simple parable from Jesus is so powerful. We want our lives to be built on something as solid as a rock, right? And not something as shifty and unstable as sand. And we'll come back to that in just a few moments. But before we crack open the text, let's just take a look kind of at the good, the bad, and the ugly of deconstruction, okay? So let's take a look just for a moment at the good. Here's the good news. The deconstruction is actually, I think, a necessary part of our journey with faith and doubt, right? The problem isn't that we deconstruct our faith. The problem is that we deconstruct our faith away. And that's what happens to so many people. Many of us, when we received our faith, maybe we received it as children, or we received it in a space where we just like, kind of like we believed, and there was maybe a powerful moment where we received our faith, but many of us received our faith uncritically, okay? Especially if we received it as children. We call that receiving of our faith uncritically. That's construction. That's when we build it, you know? Like somebody hands it to you, and then here, you have it. You've constructed our faith, but we do so uncritically. But at some point, our faith, it needs to be tested, and it needs to be broken down a bit, and we call that process deconstructed. And I want you to hear this. It's okay to doubt. It's okay to question. I don't think we hear that from pastors enough. There's a reason why in our Next Steps link that you see either on your phone or in the card in front of you, like we encourage people to ask questions. You should ask questions about Jesus. You should have questions about your faith. In fact, one of the most seminal moments in the history of the Christian church was a deconstruction moment. You know, for generations, leaders in the Roman Catholic Church had been abusing power and using twisted theology to enrich themselves. Right? So along came people like Martin Luther and John Calvin and others who questioned the faith that had been handed to them. They deconstructed broken theology of the 16th century Catholic Church, and they reconstructed theology rooted in the Bible. They said, boy, we've been handed a lot of traditions. Those traditions seem to be manipulating people. So let's go back to the text. They deconstructed, and then they reconstructed. The result was a massive movement in the Christian church called Protestantism, of which all of us, if we're in this room today, are somehow touched by just by hearing my voice. All right? Deconstruction is not, in and of itself, something we need to run from. We just need to do it well. Now, in the last message of this series, we're going to talk about discernment and how we can seek what's true in this world, not what feels true in this world, but what actually is true. That's good news. There is truth that we can know and we can find. So here's the bad news, all right? Here's the bad news, particularly when it comes to Jesus followers, okay? People are walking away from the Christian church today in huge numbers. In preparation for this message, I went onto YouTube and I typed in, okay, Christian deconstruction stories. And I was just overcome with grief at story after story after story of people sharing their own journey of leaving the church and walking away from faith in Jesus. When I was in college years ago, a book came out. It was called I Kissed Dating Goodbye. Some of you have probably heard of this. It was by a guy named Joshua Harris. The book sold millions and millions of copies. It catapulted Harris into Christian celebrity. He went on to write another bestseller book about courtship, in which he outlined his journey that he took to court, not date, but court his wife. Very old-fashioned word, right? He courted his wife, and then he married her, right? Now, in his mid-20s, Harris went on to pastor a huge megachurch in Maryland that he pastored for a number of years. But by 2020, just a couple of years ago, Joshua Harris had completely deconstructed himself away from the Christian faith. Now he's divorced from his wife and says he's not even a Christian. These kinds of stories are all over this place. He's even offering to teach other Christians how to deconstruct their faith. Think about that for a minute. Now, in case this feels a bit distant and removed from us, right here in this church in 2017, we coached and supported a young church planter who went off to plant a church south of here, only then to walk away from his faith and his family just 2 years later. And I am still riddled with the weight of how did I miss this? How could this have happened? Deconstruction surrounds us. So I wept just listening to story after story after story on YouTube of people who over the course of their lives had really good questions but got really bad answers or perhaps no answers at all. And I caution you, if you do go looking for deconstruction stories on YouTube, you're going to find a lot of very intelligent people. And right here in our church, we have a church full of very intelligent people. But as we see in the parable that Kennell read this morning, it wasn't the intelligent man who built his house on the rock. It was the wise man who built his house on the rock. And so my hope is that we can be a people of wisdom, not just intelligence. We don't just want to be people who know a bunch of stuff, but a people who know the difference between right and what's wrong, what's true and what's false. And many people, many of our smartest professors, many of your friends may be very intelligent, but could be desperately void of wisdom. So that's the bad news, okay? Lots of people are deconstructing all around us. And worse, more are going to follow. Part of the reason that we're doing this series is so that when, not if, but when some of you go through your own deconstruction, it will be a journey that leads you closer to Jesus, not further away from Jesus. All right, so that's the good and the bad. Are you ready for the ugly? All right, here's the ugly. All right. Many people are deconstructing their faith because the church has failed to be the church. Right? Young people wrestle with hard questions like, why did the church, you know, participate in these terrible crusades in history? How am I supposed to reconcile the apparent contradictions in the Bible? Why did the church condone slavery? Right? Some of these we're going to address directly, by the way. We're going to talk about deconstruction and race. We're going to talk about deconstruction and marriage and sex and things like that. These are important topics that people are kind of taking in and trying to figure out on their own. Why has the church shamed people so severely over sexual sin? Why does the evangelical church seem sometimes to be just another branch of the Republican Party? Right? And perhaps worse is the fact that when people do deconstruct their faith, instead of being received and loved and cared for in that journey with loving embrace from the church, instead the voices of the church are often heard chastising them and saying things like, well, they were probably never true Christians in the first place, or they just don't want Christianity because they want to do whatever they want to do. Now, sometimes those things may be true. We just need to be cautious about the way that we see and think about people. And we need to be cautious about dismissing the journey that other people have so quickly. The reality is that people's journeys are different and important, and we need to take it case by case. So instead of dismissing the deconstruction of others, here's what I hope we can be asking instead. I want us to be asking the question, how can we question our faith without losing it? I believe that's possible. Again, this is why I so strongly encourage asking deep questions and being truth seekers at our church. If you are a genuine truth seeker, I believe that you will eventually find yourself at the feet of Jesus. If we believe that Jesus is the very essence of truth, how can we not? All right, how's everybody doing? Hanging in there? All right. We're going to keep exploring a bit about why this is happening, but let's look back at the text for this morning. This is the very end of Matthew chapter 7, but it's particularly important that you know that this is the very end of the Sermon on the Mount, right? Jesus has just spent the last three chapters, though I'm sure when he was speaking it, he wasn't thinking about chapters. He's preaching the greatest sermon in the history of the world. Okay, it was radical. It was beautiful. He spoke words of life into people. And I challenge anyone who's questioning Jesus or deconstructing Jesus and the faith and the church, I challenge anybody to just read Matthew 5, 6, and 7 and contend with the beauty of Jesus, who Jesus is. So now the sermon has come to an end, and Jesus is now naming these words for what they are, words of life and wisdom. And he says in verse 24, therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and this is important, it's not just the hearing, but the doing, and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. So we'll break down the parable in a moment, but here's one of the challenging realities of modern day deconstruction. Modern day deconstruction has no patience for things of the past. So here's these words from a 2,000-year-old teacher from Galilee. And really put those old words into practice? I think not, right? Our world has shifted increasingly away from any honor of the past. And this is a fundamental change, a huge change in the way society works. So just hang in there for like the 2-minute skim the surface sociology lesson, okay? Generally speaking, in most past human cultures, a person's place in society was directly related to how they kind of fulfilled their role within that given society. So honor was given to those who were gatekeepers of past beliefs, traditions, and to those who then dutifully filled out their given role in society. But we know that the world that we live in today is a very, very different world. Honor is given out in much different ways. Instead of finding our value and honor in the ways that we connect to the past, our value is earned by what we achieve in the present. Okay? And so we no longer live in an honor-based culture, we live in an achievement-based culture. Consider for a moment just the ramifications for this. Social privilege is now given to those who earn it. Education, celebrity, accumulation of wealth, these are the currencies of our world today. In general, value is no longer given to who somebody is, but to what someone does. That's like the opposite of the song that Mike just let us in. Like, more than anything else that you can do, I just want you, right? So it's the opposite of that. What we're really saying is, you know, more than who you are, I just want you to do stuff for me. That's the way that our world works today. The shift from honor-based culture to achievement-based culture isn't an evil in and of itself. I want to make sure that's plain. But we need to understand the way it affects the way we relate to the past. So whereas in honor cultures, they guard, protect, and pass along deeply held beliefs, an achievement culture is the opposite. It emphasizes the breaking with past beliefs and dogmas. That means that new ideas are considered more likely to be true, not less likely to be true. So as like evolved people, we need to break with the past superstitions and embrace the new. So when Jesus was preaching his Sermon on the Mount, he was near Galilee. He was near the Sea of Galilee, okay? This was the region that he was doing a lot of his ministry in. All right? The communities in that region had a livelihood that was based around this big lake. So many of their homes and their towns were built near this lake. So here's like the geological realities of where they lived. During the dry months, the ground in that region was hard as a rock, right? But anyone who had been around long enough to have seen heavy rains that would have come through, torrential rains that would have come through once in a while, that seemingly hard ground would become nothing more than sand when the rains came. So a house that was built on what looked like rock would be fundamentally compromised at its most important structural point, the foundation. So over time, as people learned that if you want your house to last, you need to dig down through that hard layer of sand to the immovable bedrock down below. It's basic, just basic engineering, right? But it had to be learned over time. Wisdom had to be accumulated over the course of generations. So what would have happened if the new generations came along and they just rejected the teachings of the old? What would have happened if they deconstructed the ideas of the past and said, well, why should I work hard and dig deep down to build a house? I'm just going to do this my own way. They themselves would eventually learn the hard way the wisdom that previous generations had already learned. This is why most lasting cultures in the world have survived by honoring those who came before them. But today, as an achievement-based culture, we don't look to the wisdom of the past. Today, our value is found in being post something, right? I'm postmodern. I'm post-Christian. I'm post-conservative. I'm post-political. I'm post-whatever. And being post something is intoxicating for people. It makes us feel enlightened, like we've moved past the brokenness of yesterday. We've left the broken ideas of the past. We've transcended to something that's higher and better. Then we like to kind of stroke our egos and we say, oh, I'm on the right side of history. But what are we building our lives on? If all we're building our lives on is the next idea or feeling of the moment, then we might be building our lives on sand, not rock. And the church needs to be careful with this as well. We too easily hand our kids a faith that demands good feelings. Okay? Not a faith that's built on the solid rock of the ancient words of Jesus, but a faith that promises that you're going to have good feelings that you want to have if you do X, Y, and Z. We do this all the time in the church. It's no wonder that people are deconstructing their faith, because they're being handed sand by their Christian leaders. Just look back at the text here. I put them side by side here so that we could look at these together. What do you notice? And you can talk back to me. But what do you notice is the same between these two verses, verse 25 and 27? This is one on the left. He's talking about the one who built the foundation on the rock. On the right, he's talking about the one who built the foundation on the sand. But what do you notice is the same in both of these? Rain came down, yep, same thing. The streams rose, yep. And the winds blew and beat against the house. All of that, like, exactly the same. Exactly the same. So one thing we can count on, no matter what, in this broken world, is that broken stuff is going to happen. Rain is going to come. Streams are going to rise. The winds are going to blow. Inflation, just count on it, right? It's going to happen. Corrupted politicians, count on it. Cancer, it's yes, count on it. Unemployment, yep. Injustice, count on it. Now, the inevitability of those things doesn't mean we don't do anything about it. Doesn't mean we don't push back against the evils of this world. But what we so often see in the deconstruction of Christianity are people wrestling with the problem of suffering. They feel like their faith was supposed to offer a measurable fix to the problem of suffering in this world. And why wouldn't they? It's what we tell our kids all the time. It's what we tell ourselves. So by either coincidence or the Holy Spirit, at Club Kids Rock this week, we just kind of had our first Club Kids Rock on Friday, and I wasn't around, but I hear it was awesome. And teacher Kathleen, my wife, was planning on teaching from the same passage in Matthew chapter 7. Again, we didn't plan that. I was like, oh man, that's the passage I'm preaching on this Sunday. That's amazing. Right, so maybe it was a God thing. So she pulled out this old Sunday school song that maybe some of you have heard before. The wise man built his house upon the rock. The wise man built his house upon the rock. The wise man built his house upon the rock. And the rains came tumbling down. All right. So so it's a great song. It's nice and easy to learn. Thank you, Mike, for helping lead that. And then there's the other. Then the verse goes, you know, for the foolish man who built his house upon the sand, the rains came down and the floods came up. The rains came down and the floods came up. Rains came down and the floods came up. And the foolish man's house went splat. So I was listening to the song because Kathleen was asking me about this. She was like, is this song an okay song to teach? And I think it's a good question to ask. We should be asking ourselves these questions about the things that we sing because they teach our souls. So we're listening to this song that's been taught to countless kids growing up in the church. And then we get to the last verse. The blessings come down when the prayers go up. The blessings come down when the prayers go up. And I paused. Now, we probably think very little of this. But I want to put our deconstruction hats on for a moment. Can you imagine how a verse like that, that says the blessings come down when the prayers go up, might be setting our kids up for disaster down the road? If we drill into our kids' heads, and to our heads, it's not just our kids, that when you pray, blessings are bam, on their way. At least two things are going to happen, okay? One, they're going to expect blessings to come down from heaven as soon as they pray. Two, they might expect that suffering should not be a part of life for somebody who builds their house on the Lord. But what happens when suffering does come and blessings don't seem apparent right away? Then they might say, as many do, I was lied to. And the deconstruction begins. And we wonder why we have an American church that does not know what to do with suffering. These deconstruction testimonies on YouTube revealed a bit of a pattern if you watch it long enough. Video after video after video of former Christians who were disillusioned by the faith because of suffering that they've seen or experienced in their own life. The faith that they had been given didn't have answers for them. Because too often we look at a parable like this and we wrongly interpret it as build your life on the words of Jesus and things are going to go just fine for you. But that's not what Jesus says, is it? The blessing of building your life on the words of Jesus isn't that storms of life aren't going to come. The blessing is that Jesus and his words are unshakable. In other words, Jesus isn't going anywhere. The truth of his teaching isn't going anywhere. It lasts even when we're suffering, even through the storm. Most Western people don't get this. Now, in the historically black church, they can say and sing with authenticity the words, the blessings come down when the prayers come up, because they know what too many Western European churches have failed to teach, that the presence of God does not mean the absence of suffering. Rather, the presence of God simply means that God is present always, and he's not going anywhere. And that in and of itself is a blessing more beautiful than we know. And I was so grateful to Mike that we were singing that song earlier. And said, like, I'm not here for a blessing. I just want to be with you, Jesus. We didn't plan that, by the way. That's like a Holy Spirit thing. Mike, you can come on up. I'm going to wrap up here in a minute. Too many of us have had handed to us a faith that says, Jesus is your hedge against bad stuff in life. Jesus is your way to spiritual good feelings. But it's no wonder why so many people are deconstructing their faith. We've been teeing up deconstruction for a generation or more. We've been pointing to the good life when we should be pointing to the one who is with us, whether life is good or bad. So instead of deconstructing our faith, we need to deconstruct some of our broken Christian theology about suffering, about a life where we don't always get what we want, but where Jesus is always going to be right there. Rains will come. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And for some of you, the rains have come, and maybe it's been raining for a long time. We need to pray for you, ask God for deliverance, ask God for provision, but the promise is not that your problems will just go away, right? The promise is that God is going to be with you. That your life, my life, challenging as they may be sometimes, in the midst of it, God is unshakable And our lives become unshakable because we stand on the unshakable rock that is Jesus and his beautiful words. So let me just close with Matthew's observation following the conclusion to Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. Matthew writes this: when Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds were amazed at his teaching. Listen to this: because he taught as one who had authority and not as their teachers of the law. So some deconstructionists may not reject the words of Jesus. In fact, I suspect that most would deeply admire the powerful words of the Sermon on the Mount. Like, wow, love your enemies? That's beautiful. What a world we might live in if we listened to Jesus about those things. But what we find at the end of Jesus' sermon is that we're not permitted to just admire the words. We're not permitted to just admire the teachings of Jesus. We're challenged to bow down before the teacher. Jesus spoke as one who had authority, not as the teachers of the law. The irony here, and we're going to talk more about this in weeks to come, is that Jesus himself was deconstructing the broken teachings of his generation. He was deconstructing their deconstruction. But here's what makes him so radically different from not only the teachers of the law of his day and all of us, whether we're questioning our faith or not, is that Jesus taught as one who had authority. And the reason he did that, and people marveled at it when he did, was because he actually had authority. And so my hope for us as we kind of go through this journey and try and make sense of the ways that we've deconstructed or the way that the church has kind of missed the mark over the years is that we're following the way of Jesus. And Jesus is the king who has authority. We need to deconstruct our deconstruction so that we might actually be the kind of people who can bow before a king. That may not be easy for any of us or many of us, but that's where we're going. So Jesus, I just ask, Heavenly Father, that you would move in our hearts so that we might actually be the kinds of people who might look to words that were written generations ago and say, wow, there's life there. There's authority there that's beautiful. Help us to pick our way through the broken things that we've been and the broken ways that we've been handed, and to help reconstruct scripture and the faith that we've been handed into the beautiful Jesus-following journey that you have made it to be. Help us get there.